Learning from Latin America. Many people in the United States have grown up thinking of ourselves as the smartest, most civilized, most able folks on the planet. While we may not say it openly, we think it, and consequently, we look down on our neighbors to the immediate south. One need only look at U.S.-Latin American relations, at over a century of American relations with South and Central American nations, which may be described as imperial and dominating. In 1927, Walter Lippmann, a New York Times columnist, wrote, quote, "We control the foreign relations of all the Caribbean countries. Not one of them could enter into serious relations abroad without our consent. We control their relations with each other. We exercise the power of life and death over their governments in that no government can survive if we refuse it recognition. We help in many of these countries to decide what they call their elections, and we do not hesitate, as we have done recently in Mexico, to tell them what kind of constitution we think they ought to have." That's found in Clara Nieto's recent book, Masters of War, put out by Seven Stories. In Lippmann's words, these actions described what many Americans, both then and now, shrunk from calling their nation an empire. In the almost 80 years since Lippmann's observations, that general state of affairs continues to describe U.S. Latin and Caribbean relations. Yet sometimes, things come from the South that surprise us. The resistance of the Cuban Revolution, surely as nakedly nationalist as it is socialist, still has a majestic David and Goliath quality to it. In the mountains of Chiapas, the Zapatista Rebellion, which, although anchored in the ancient indigenous Indian and mestizo populations, continues to show that the people of Mexico have not agreed to be servants of the rich Norte Americanos. And now, the people of Bolivia, again, many of them descendants of the indigenous native peoples of the land, have shown us something remarkable in the annals of resistance to empire. From the high plains and villages of Bolivia, from the poor, the unemployed, the dispossessed, has come the water wars. When politicians and foreign business interests pushed through a law essentially claiming all rights to Bolivian water, the people, across virtually all sectors, rebelled. And through something they called Coordinadora, or coalition, Bolivians staged public demonstrations, erected barricades along major roads, and exposed the backroom deals signed by corrupt politicians to enrich themselves and beggar the people. These water wars unleashed latent people's power to run out a series of presidents and force the U.S. company Bechtel, which tried to broker the deal, to leave the country with empty hands. Soon, English readers in the U.S. will be able to read for themselves the remarkable story of how everyday Bolivians, mainly in the city of Cochabamba, stood up to the greedy local and foreign businessmen to fight neoliberalism and political corruption in the face of brutal government repression. One of their keys was to expand and, in some cases, bypass the traditional trade union workers, who, under the new economic conditions of Bolivia and much of Latin America, constitute a minority of workers. They turned to the poorest, least organized, least paid, most oppressed people, and formed the popular base that the traditional unions, the government, and foreign business backers could not ignore. They organized the people. That story is told by one of the main organizers, Oscar Oliveira, in the soon-to-be-published Cochabamba, Water Rebellion in Bolivia, soon to be put out by Southland Press. What we learn from this is something very fundamental, that the people, when organized, are powerful indeed and can transform our social, economic, and political reality. And that lesson comes not from the North, but from the South, from Bolivia, from the poor. Resistance. For Free Speech Radio News, from Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.